This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Welcome to Carlisle ValueCast. My name is Rory McMillan, and I'm the head of external affairs for Carlisle in Europe. Joining me today is Brooke Coban and also Michael Wand, who head up Carlisle's US and Europe Growth Capital Funds. They're both long-serving Carlisle employees, and thanks, gentlemen, for joining me this morning. Let me start our conversation with Brooke. You could maybe help us to understand what constitutes the growth capital market space in the US, and maybe talk a bit about how is it different from the more traditional LBO, the large cap LBO?
Thanks, Rory. Well, the growth market sits between two more well-established markets in the United States. At one end of the spectrum, you have the venture capital market, where investors take very early stage technology and market adoption risks. At the other end, you have the classic buyout business. So the growth market today in the US really sits between those two extremes, and it borrows a bit sort of stylistically from each of those strategies. I would say the things that came up in talking with a couple of different investors is one, use of leverage at much lower levels than what you would typically see in the buyout business. Two, more often than not, these are non-control investments, so an investor is buying less than 50%. Three, and this is especially true in the US, is that technology is central to the business. It can be a breakthrough technology or it could be a technology-enabled services business, but technology is at work in some manner. Typically, investors in growth funds are looking for revenue growth in the 15 to 20% range. And in many cases, you find companies that have not been backed before. And so oftentimes growth investments made by Carlisle or others are the first institutional capital that's been received by these companies.
So that's great, and it's very helpful to have those five key characteristics. And Michael, thinking about those characteristics, do they fit into the definition of how you see growth capital in Europe?
Well, principally, I think the market is not completely different than in the US. I would say that growth equity is probably one of the most misused or abused names in the private equity industry, because some people define under that an investment in a venture-type business still, where you fund the next growth phase, but at the end of the day, you fund a business which is still loss-making or where you have to cover working capital. That is not the type of investments we would be doing. We look at small-cap buyouts in the technology space. So those are investments into growing companies, because at the end of the day, it's all about where do you derive your value creation from. And in contrast to maybe a traditional buyout, the distribution of value creation between the various value driver levers is probably more geared towards EBITDA and revenue growth than it would be, for example, to debt reduction or debt repayment or other factors of value drivers. We're investing 20 to 50 million equity in buyout transactions, in small cap buyouts, in the European TMT landscape, and these are often control investments.
So that's very helpful. And if you then think about current market opportunities in the US, how is the market looking at the moment?
I think the headline is it's been a very frothy environment. And if you look at the broader market, technology M&A volume in 2013 was at the highest level that it's been in 7 or 8 years. So there's very significant transaction activity that's occurring. It is frankly hard to remember a time when valuations have been higher or when lenders have been more aggressive in terms of the acquisition financing that they're offering. So I think there are a couple of different factors that are at work there. One, lenders have been extraordinarily aggressive, and so you've seen the return of targeted leverage reaching levels of 6 or 7 times debt to EBITDA and, you know, fairly flexible covenant terms. Two, what you hear is that there are now 300 tech-focused investment firms chasing growth deals in the U.S. So you have, you know, more funds with these same attributes that we've been describing. So that's clearly at work as well. And then finally, large corporates in the technology sector are sitting on historically high cash balances. Those cash balances are now starting to be deployed. You've seen an uptick in M&A activity. So I think overall, what we're seeing is a market that is quite buoyant. It's an environment where you have to look quite carefully and be very discriminating in order to find value.
And frothy in Europe, Michael, would you describe that as being the current state of play for and opportunities in the growth sector?
When we come across a company, price is one decisive factor, but it shouldn't be the ultimate factor, which is why we try to stay away from auctions. And we want to have a situation where an entrepreneur chooses deliberately Carlisle by saying, A, I want that team. I want the sector expertise, but I also want the global footprint. And I do think that helps us, particularly in Europe, because they want to branch out into the US. They want to do something in Asia. And if you look at the competitive landscape, there aren't many funds in our ticket size range who can actually offer that.
And then looking at Europe, the headlines now are telling us Europe has turned the corner economically. Are you seeing indicators that demonstrate that? And is that manifesting itself in terms of opportunities in the market?
I have always had a slightly controversial view on this one, because I think on the macro picture, that's absolutely true. It's all moving in the right direction. I have always maintained that for our business, that is actually not that relevant. We are operating at the micro level. We're operating at companies which have 15 million revenues, maybe up to 50, 60 million revenues, which are in a space which by definition is very international. So for those companies, let's say a micro-oriented mistake, meaning, for example, putting the wrong management team in, having the wrong, let's say, product set or making the wrong decision on an acquisition, is much more relevant than where the bond yield in Portugal stands.
And maybe leading on from that, can you share with us one or two examples of recent investments you have made and maybe why you've taken that decision to invest?
Sure. So I think one of the advantages of doing growth off of the Carlyle platform is that, you know, our U.S. growth team is a small group of 14 investment professionals split between New York and Washington. We have, I think, a very capable team and a good track record. But what is most important, I think, is that we have access to a much broader set of resources that the firm can bring to the table. Because the firm more broadly has expertise across a number of these other areas, such as industrial and consumer and retail and healthcare and aerospace and defense, we're able to pull in some expertise from those resources and try to think about growth a little bit differently than maybe some of our peers here in the U.S. do, who have narrower technology-centric mandates. So that's the approach that we've taken, the way to sort of combat some of the frothiness that we talked about earlier. One example that I would mention is a company called Bonatel, which is a recent investment. Bonatel is a founder-owned company. They're based in Las Vegas. The company was bootstrapped by a single owner who has maintained a role of CEO over the course of the past 15-plus years. You know, that company is roughly $200 million in revenue, about $20 million in EBITDA, has demonstrated really attractive growth characteristics over the past several years. We established a relationship with the principal there, cultivated over a period of not months, but years. So it's not something that's coming to us through an auction channel where the success or failure of which will be driven largely by valuation and terms. What this company does is they operate really as a middleman between hotel companies here in the U.S., mostly at the higher end, luxury and boutique types of businesses, and international travel operators outside of the U.S. What we liked about the business and looking at it was the fact we have a number of other Carlyle portfolio companies that touch this space where we're able to get very deep insights into what's happening in the market, how differentiated is this offering, what's the competitive landscape, and we're really able to get comfortable with the positioning of this company in the market. The second thing is we were able to reach out to a number of operating partners who have run companies in this space who were able to help work with us through the diligence process and ensure that we were finding all of the key issues through diligence. And then the final point, this is a company that, although all of their hotel operators are for the most part in the U.S., most of the tour operators, their customers, are coming from other parts of the world. As a pure U.S. growth fund, diligencing those types of customers would be very, very challenging. But again, reaching out to colleagues in Europe or in Asia through leveraging the network, we're really able to get very well informed. So that's an example of the types of things that we're trying to seek out in this market environment.
And on the European front, Michael, what sort of tech companies have you taken an interest in?
We did an investment last year in a Swedish business called BTI, which is a location business in the sense that it does dubbing and subtitling for international broadcasters, particularly in the Nordics. So the company is based in Sweden and have also then over the years expanded in other geographies. But it's also a very technology-driven business because it's actually run from a workflow extremely efficiently and also with a lot of automation. And that is a business where we're currently helping them to get more of a stronger foothold in the US. What I should maybe say is the reason why we felt comfortable investing in this business is that we have done quite a few investments in the media space, both as a firm, but also as a fund.
So turning now to how Carlyle can actually create value and make a difference, what do you think are some of the key components of that offer that you have to companies
You know, I would say in the current market environment, you very often have a choice between either paying up for a premium asset and hoping for the best, or taking on a company that is more of a project. It may not have significant downside risks, but the value creation path requires more work. And I would say many of our portfolio companies today fall into that latter category. And really what we're trying to do within these portfolio companies is whether they come to us as founder-owned businesses, as Bonhotel did, or whether they were owned by larger corporates, really what we're trying to do is relatively straightforward. You look at the levers for value creation. So in most cases, we will use some financial leverage with our investments. We typically will be levering our companies at much lower levels than what you would typically see in a classic buyout. And what that means is that value creation has to come from EBITDA growth. And so typically, we're looking really hard at channels or levers that can be pulled to drive revenue growth. We're, again, trying to leverage the Carlyle platform to identify opportunities for our U.S.-centric companies to expand into international markets. It may be making some investments that are longer-term in nature. In most cases, we're making significant investments to scale sales and marketing operations. So it starts with organic growth. We use operating partners very aggressively in undertaking these types of value creation initiatives, working alongside of us, helping us with due diligence, and then more importantly, after the investment has been made, working closely with those management teams, pairing financial acumen with operational acumen to drive value creation. So revenue growth is something that we look at very hard. Related to that is EBITDA growth, and in most cases, we're also looking hard at productivity investments that can be made, leveraging technology that can help to automate processes which historically may have been, you know, more manual and less efficient. And again, it all comes back to being part of a global firm that has resources that our typical competitors in the U.S. growth market just may not have.
So, Michael, you're obviously managing a team that operates across a number of different European markets. How do you look through the lens of value creation at your investments, and maybe share with us a couple of examples of how you're delivering that value creation?
We're an 11-people team. We have to cater for heterogeneous marketplaces by having nationals from the various countries on the team, because in many of those situations, it still matters that you speak the local language to the entrepreneur. We have done investments in 9 different jurisdictions in Europe successfully. We have proven that point that we can engage with these people and find successful investments. I think we benefit from the fact that many of those entrepreneurs look at us growing their business internationally. And that can be done organically, or it can be done through acquisitions, or it can be done through additional product routes we go down. And in some cases, you also change the business model from a perpetual license model in software, for example, to a subscription model. But I give you an example which testifies to what we do with those companies. One is a business we actually sold in 2012. It was an Austrian company called UC4. When we acquired it, it was basically a business with about 25 million in revenues and 4 million in profit, pretty much focused on the German-speaking markets. It was providing a data center automation software. We then, a year later, made a U.S. acquisition in Seattle. So that actually developed the company into a position where about 50% of its revenue came from Europe, 50% of its revenue came in the U.S., which in this space is the predominant marketplace, also where people focus on terms of the technology trends. Over time, we were able to establish this company's awareness and perception in a global marketplace as an innovative company who made it into different rankings at the analysts, the IT research analysts, and that helped it to grow faster. We, in some cases, had also the opportunity to do business development with respect to helping a sale into a Carlyle portfolio company, because this software is used in all sorts of large data centers. That helped us to get a very successful exit. I do think that we only got paid the multiple we got because of its strategic positioning, which was recognized in the marketplace, and its international footprint, which will help the current investor to probably build upon it.
As we look into the crystal ball and we look ahead, Brooke, what do you see are some of the key trends that are going to impact the sector over the next 2 years?
So technology trends, you have a number of broad-based themes, such as the transition of software world from perpetual models to software as a service. You have seen, you know, large migration, and still in the early stages of enterprise operations and technology into the cloud, away from premise-based servers. So our focus is really less on the bleeding edge of technology and more on the application of these evolving technologies into the end industry verticals where Carlyle has domain expertise. Let me give you a few examples of that. So one would be a company called Gemcom Software. Gemcom is the leading provider of software tools to mining companies around the world. Mining, clearly not an area that gets a lot of airtime in the technology world. However, it's a very interesting area, a massive global business, one that maps quite well to Carlyle's global footprint, one where technology adoption has lagged the broader markets. And there were some really interesting opportunities for us to leverage Carlyle's global footprint and benefit from some of these technology trends. In this case, it was about knitting together a number of discrete software tools into an integrated offering that could be available not only on mainframes in the company's headquarters, but out in disparate locations in Belo Horizonte in Brazil or in sub-Saharan Africa.
Michael, what technology trends are impacting how you're looking at opportunities?
I would pretty much agree with what Brooke has said in terms of the companies we would be looking at. We have recently done one B2C e-commerce investment, but frankly, that was the first in our fund, and I don't necessarily see us moving aggressively into B2C offerings, i.e. business-to-consumer offerings. Most of the investments we have done, which plays to what Brooke was saying, are B2B enablers. So we were doing technology investments which are playing a role in helping businesses in doing their business better. When it comes to Europe, we look at situations where the fact of being European may actually be an advantage. One or two examples, we may look at very vertical place, so situations where it matters that you are driven by a specific geography. Let's say, for example, we used to have an HR software business, which was obviously driven by the fact that regulation in that particular region was regularly refreshed by the government. We had an investment in the past which was supporting Basel reporting, i.e. financial risk management, which again was an initiative driven originally out of Europe and has become more relevant in the world now. So those would be topics we ideally would favor, but we would not make this the single most important filter in terms of looking at a business.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for sharing your insights with us today on this ValueCast broadcast.
Thank you, Rory.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at carlyle.com. This has been a Carlyle ValueCast podcast.